just one of many acts performing at Forest Fest in Emo this weekend. If you're curious, by the way, Monday's there tomorrow night. Stage times available, by the way, on midlands103.com if you want to look them up, or indeed forestfest.ie. Now, what is this superfruit that all women should be eating? Actually, it's one of the everyday ones. It's not something exotic or unusual or rare, and I'll be telling you more after 11. But on the subject of festivals, I got a message from Ballycumber, where people were trying to resurrect the Ballycumber Fair, but insurance prices were just a joke. The text says, "We had it half set up. The old-time bikers and the committee were all ready to go. We were going to have a barbecue, but the insurance to hold an old-time fair was just crippling. Sonny Daly, James Donnellan, Healy and Sons, all the gang, they're all downbeat this morning," it says. Dave has been in touch about assaults on healthcare workers. He says, "My wife is an emergency department nurse. Never a week goes by without her telling me of some verbal abuse at work. The thing is, it isn't from the patients. It's generally from the relatives who won't abide by hospital rules." On post offices and banking, Amy says, "If we still had our network of local post offices, we could do without the bank. Or will the post office end up going cashless as well? Is that inevitable?" she wonders. And Catherine, final message on that topic, "The government will take no action on AIB. They are the bank. We are only the people. So don't hold your breath to see the ATM remain in Birr, in Eden Derry, or in Rathdowney." Sinead Hubble is the chief executive of the Midlands Today Show. She does all this hard-hitting current affairs research.
Really do, don't I?
Yes.
I watch hours and hours of Netflix, all for the cause.
And your obsession of choice is?
Bridgerton. Mm. So good news that season 3 has begun filming. There was a short video released on from Netflix just to show that the cast are all getting ready and making a comeback.
Right. Why should we be excited?
Because it's brilliant, Will.
Okay.
Why haven't you watched anything of it yet? So season 1, so the whole series revolves around the Bridgertons. So this is a family. There's 8 siblings in it, and each season apparently is going to follow one of them. So the first season followed Daphne in her hunt for a husband. So
who's Daphne when she's at home?
She's one of the Bridgertons.
Right.
One of the sisters.
Okay. There are sisters and they're all man mad.
No, the sisters and brothers.
All right.
So there's a mixture. You really need to watch it, Will. So she ended up getting married to the Duke. So it followed all around their courtship, their marriage, all of that. Then season 2 followed Anthony, who was the eldest brother in the family. Bit of a ladies' man, didn't want to settle down. His father had passed away, so he had taken on the responsibility of the family and had no interest in getting married. I see your face and it glaze over. You need to watch it. It's really, really good.
What about season 3 would be compelling for me?
Well, season 3, we're going to hear more from Lady Whistledown, who is...
Oh, Lady Whistledown, right.
Whistledown.
And she is when she's at home?
She's the lady who tells everyone's secrets. So Pen Featherington is, her alias is Lady Whistledown. And she writes a newsletter and tells everything that's going on behind the scenes. Mm. Bits and pieces of gossip, and everybody's trying to figure out who she is. So
her name is Pen.
Yeah.
What's that short for?
So she's played by Nicola Coughlan.
What's the long version of Pen?
Penelope.
You mean Penelope?
Yeah.
Go on.
I knew you were waiting for that. So Nicola Coughlan plays Pen Featherington, and her late dad, Martin Coughlan, was from Geitle in Offaly. So She's a lovely girl.
You see, now you're talking. Sinead has this remarkable knack. If some celebrity comes to Ireland and they happen to bring their dog and their dog cocks its leg in the Midlands, she will find out about it. She will know what the local connection is. So just run that by us one more time. The Gaelic connection to all of this is what?
Nicola Coughlan.
Uh-huh.
Her late dad, Martin, came from Gaelic.
Good. Now, who's Nicola Coughlan?
I give up, Will. I actually give up with you.
Who's Nicola Coughlan?
She's one of the stars of the show.
Which one? Who does she play? I don't watch it. Who does she play? Is it a small role? Is it a big role?
I can't deal with you. I've told you all this a couple of minutes ago. You're not listening. I'm done.
So, there's much excitement, I believe, anyway. It's getting huge ratings on Netflix. Not that they ever really publish exact streamer numbers, but it's a big hit. And the main reason it's a big hit, it's not really the compelling storyline, is it?
What are you getting at now?
But what would be the motivation to watch?
It's a really good show.
Is it a bit raunchy?
It can be.
Is that part of the mix?
It might be.
Yes.
There's some very attractive characters in it.
When is it going to debut anyway? If they're just starting filming of season 3?
It'll be another couple of months before it hits Netflix.
Okay. Thanks very much, Sinead. Yesterday on Headaches and Heartaches, we heard about a no ring, no bring policy at weddings. So, in other words, if you are not married, you don't get to bring the other half. Doesn't matter if you've been going out for years. And this caused consternation in one particular family. Well, a text says, well, this was on the topic yesterday about no ring, no bring. Pippa Middleton did this to Vogue Williams on her wedding. And this, by the way, is not from Kate Middleton. This is from Kate, who's sending a text. Thanks, Kate. No ring, no bring happened in celebrity circles. Well, that's usually where it starts, isn't it? Regarding AIB and the loss of ATMs, one caller says, this is the biggest non-story ever. Banks have been withdrawing ATMs for years. Most people do not use cash these days. And if you really want cash, there will still be somewhere in all of those towns that you can get it. Okay. I haven't looked forensically around Rathdowney, for instance, but if there's no ATM in the AIB, if this decision goes ahead, where is the nearest ATM after that? You could be travelling quite a bit. Except some people use card. Lots of people do, in fact. Only 1 in 6 transactions in the UK these days is cash, and it's probably something similar here. But does that mean if you're in the minority, you don't matter? Is that the way we want to run our society? Sounds like somewhere I don't want to live. How about you? What is the one fruit that ladies should have in their diet? Well, according to new research, it's not something exotic or unusual or available only in rare parts of the world. It is the humble banana. Regular consumption of potassium lowers your blood pressure and brings on all sorts of cardiovascular benefits, particularly as you age. And I'm just wondering, is this unique to women or is it a rule for everybody? Let's explore with Lucy Luby of Lucy Luby Nutrition in Mullingar. Good morning, Lucy.
Morning, Will. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. We know that bananas contain potassium, so how new is it that it should be so beneficial?
Well, I suppose the key word here is potassium and its benefits. And banana is only one of many food sources of potassium. But it's, I suppose, most commonly known and it's the most convenient source of food for most people.
What else contains potassium that we might eat on a regular basis?
Well, I mean, avocado, for example, has become particularly important or popular recently. I mean, you can go for spinach, which wouldn't be as popular for some, but you'd have like white beans, for example, like 1 cup of white beans would have twice the potassium of a banana. Legumes like your lentils, your chickpeas, soya beans, that type of thing, they'd be a very cheap source of potassium as well too. The likes of like beets or any fruit and veg juices, some fish, salt substitutes, for example, we started using sea salt, Himalayan salt, they would be a good source of potassium as well too. So, I mean,
to clarify on salt, because mm-hmm. too much salt in the diet raises blood pressure. So
yes.
do you end up self-defeating if you have the Himalayan salt?
No. So, for example, you have some salts which would be like your common garden table salt would be high in sodium. And then you'd have other salts that would be lower in sodium and higher in potassium. OK, so, for example, if you were to cook with a little bit of table salt, or if you have like a high blood pressure, you might use like a low salt, you know, with a low sodium level. But if you cook with that, that would be fine. And then maybe flavor your food with a little bit of sea salt then, which would be higher, or Himalayan pink salt, which would be higher in your potassium. So you're getting a little bit of both. But I suppose what drives me insane is every now and again, an article comes out about one particular food.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, this is a superfood. This is brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And then everyone goes out and everyone's trying to be healthy and knows they need to make an effort to be healthier. And then something might jump out with them. Oh, I'm at risk of heart attack or stroke, so therefore I will eat a banana. But for example, like, if you think about your recommended daily intake of sodium, or of potassium, sorry, should be roughly around 4,700 milligrams a day. So you would need to eat 10 bananas.
Oh, wow.
Roughly, every day, to get your recommended daily intake.
But nobody's going to eat 10 bananas. I mean, you'll have some tummy afterwards.
Exactly. Or you might not leave the toilet for a long, long time. So really what the key thing is there's no one particular food that's going to save you from whatever you're at risk of. Balance saves you from,
yes.
you know, potential health complications.
Because sometimes what is a benefit in one way can be a
yes.
negative in another. For instance, if you have too many bananas, apart from the toilet
yes.
issue, well, they contain a lot of sugar, don't they? A lot of carbohydrates.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, you know, like they're not considered a low carbohydrate food, okay? So like, for example, if somebody comes to me for weight loss, I usually would say, well, let's cut bananas out for a while, because if their activity levels are quite low, you know, so their carbohydrate need would be quite low. So your starchy carbohydrate need comes really from your activity, you know, and some people have a very low level of activity. They might be less than 2,000 steps a day, for example. So it's all about balance. So what you want to do, like Western diets, for example, are very typically very low in potassium rich foods, okay, and they're very high in sodium. Why is that? Because we're overly reliant on processed food, okay? We don't eat fruit and vegetables. Most people, you know, usually don't buy them. There might be a token bag of apples or bag of bananas in the food shop, but sometimes a lot of people, if you look at your fruit bowl at the end of the week, the fruit is rotten in the bowl. It hasn't been eaten, you know. So really, like, we need to include more variety in our diet. And that's how you get a broad range of minerals and vitamins that your body needs. If you have a broad range of colour and fruit, vegetables, appropriate carbohydrates and protein and fat sources. And it's really getting a balance on that plate and not just focusing in on one particular food that's rich in one particular mineral or the other, you know?
Lucy, thank you for some perspective and balance. Always great chatting
no
with
problem.
You.
No problem at all. We'll chat soon. Bye-bye.
Lucy Luby from Lucy Luby Nutrition in Mullingar. According to the lead professor of this research, and he's based in the University of Amsterdam, his name I just cannot pronounce and will not attempt, but he says it's well known high salt consumption is associated with elevated blood pressure and raised risk of heart attacks and stroke. Health advice has focused on limiting salt intake, but this is difficult to achieve when our diets include processed foods. Potassium helps the body excrete more sodium in your urine. And in our study, dietary potassium was linked with the greatest health gains in women. So they had studied 25,000 people over the age of 40. They determined that potassium had a particular benefit for the ladies. But as Lucy Luby says, it doesn't mean you become a gorilla and gobble the bananas. It's all about balance. Now, speaking of cars, used prices are 64% higher than they were before the COVID pandemic began. Just one of the many things we learned this week, during which there was a heat wave. Public sector unions insisted on getting far more of a pay rise than the government was prepared to offer. And the unusual story of the chess players, the men, refusing to lose to the women and the lengths they would go to avoid it. Let's meet our Friday panel. And today we are joined by Vincent Devine, well-known artist who has a studio in Tullamore. We get it wrong where you're originally from. We have to, you know, be accurate.
That's our thing, Will. That's our thing. Yeah, the studio, at the gallery at the moment now is a studio. So people will notice it's all closed off at the front. So I've been preparing for something really exciting now, a big exhibition coming up. And Vicky Phelan's one is coming back to Tullamore as
Brilliant.
Well. So that'll be around September time. So people are wondering if I've closed down or not. I haven't closed down. I've been a busy bee. Excuse the pun with Geraldine in presence here. A busy bee working behind the scenes to give you something amazing now for the town. So
on that busy bee reference, Geraldine Byrne is here, chairperson of the Offaly Beekeepers Association. Good morning, Geraldine.
Good morning.
And we discovered, actually, just as you were chatting, you have something in common because Vincent had experience when you were 18 in Canada with bees.
Yeah, I was in the prairies in Saskatoon in Saskatchewan, finding myself because your nearest neighbour is about 3-4 miles away. And I did beekeeping for the summer. It was fascinating.
There you go, Geraldine, a new member.
Yes, a new member for Offaly Beekeepers. Yeah. Always welcome.
Like, what do the Beekeepers Association do? I mean, do you meet? Do you
yes.
coffees? What exactly is the nature of the work?
We meet. We meet once a month. Now, this was pre-COVID, but we'd meet. We'd have a lecture from a beekeeper once a month during the winter, and then in springtime we have an 8-week beginner's course, and that that involves having a classes in the morning and then going out to the apiary for practical work in the afternoon, in the afternoon, early afternoon. So it's great. We've 110, 120 beekeepers in Offaly Beekeepers.
So good network then.
Great network.
Also with us, Eileen Loughlin, who you will know on Instagram from Everything Eileen. Good morning.
Good morning, Will. Good morning, Vincent and Geraldine. How are you?
Good.
Morning, Eileen.
How's the new Baba, Eileen?
Great. She slept through the last two nights, so I don't want to jinx myself, but that is good going.
What age is she now?
She's 8 months now, so it's flying by, really flying by, but she's great. Thank you.
So are you in any way experienced with bees or other animals around North Westmeath?
No, I was listening in and I really don't have any experience. I suppose even bees, wasps, I just generally run a mile, preferred that sting me. I actually got my first sting last summer, so thankfully wasn't allergic. But again, bees probably don't sting. I'm probably really, really showing my ignorance here.
So you got all the way to 21 without being stung?
Yeah, 21 plus a few.
Yeah. I was stung, I think I was about 4 on the way to the shop and I had an ice cream. So I was already asking for trouble, but anyway.
Yeah, and mine was, in fairness, in front of the Eiffel Tower, so I really won't forget it. So it wasn't a bad spot to get stung.
So let's get into the news agenda from the week. And we'll start with, I suppose, one of the more amusing stories. Did you read about the chess players the male chess players who did not want to lose to a woman. And when they studied this, they found the fellas would drag out the game for as long as possible rather than lose and, you know, lose face and so on. Do you have any insights into the male ego there, Vincent, as to, you know?
I mean
chess is an art form, in fairness.
Like, in fairness, can they not just change it to, like, I lost another person? I mean, what is the story with the whole male-female thing? I mean, look, it's about competence. If someone's better at something else than you, what's the issue whether they're male or female? They're just simply better at the game, the job, something else. I just think it's a very reductive way to bring down quite an intelligent and intellectual game. And statements like that make them look like they're far from intellectual, in my opinion. I just think it's ridiculous. You know, it's just about the human side of it. If someone's better at something of skill than you, leave your male ego at the door and just say, look, shake hands, good job. That's my opinion on the whole thing.
Would there be some settings, perhaps in the gym, for instance, if you were, I don't know if you lift weights...
No, I just skip a meal. I don't do the exercise thing. I've heard too many people getting hurt doing exercise and sports. So listen, I am immobile and I just skip a meal a day. It's
well, 80% of weight management is what you eat anyway. Only 20% is the exercise. But picture this. If you are in the gym, you're benching, OK? And let's say Eileen comes up beside you and she benches more. How do you feel?
How do I feel? I mean, fair play to Eileen. I mean, Eileen's benching more, but I mean, it really depends. It's all about your ego and what you're in the gym for. If you're in the gym to keep fit and healthy, then I've no issue there. If you're in the gym to look good and physically show off your prowess, then I might have a problem with it. But like I said, I'm doing hypotheticals here. But it all depends on what your ethos is for going to the gym. If you're going to the gym for a certain, you know, or to go to pull women, then you're going to have a problem with Eileen benching more than you. But because Eileen would be throwing you around the bedroom as opposed to you throwing her around the bedroom, do you know what I mean?
I don't know what Enda would have to say about that, Eileen.
No comment.
Okay, sticking with chess then, I think it's the safer of the topics here. Geraldine, I mean, you taught in school for years. I don't know, was it a mixed class? Was there any, you know, genetic competition that just made the boys not want to lose to the girls, or what would you put it down to?
Well, no, I suppose I thought, I was teaching in a junior school where actually everybody is equal. You know what I mean? All the boys and girls just do everything together. But I think it is a societal thing that, you know, the macho male, and it's a whole way of rearing children. And teaching them that everybody is equal and that the male ego, I mean, there is a male ego. I mean, you can see it. Like, why are women excluded from, you know, positions of power in church and in state and all over the place? So it is a societal thing, but it has to be tackled at a young age to say we are all equal. It does not matter.
Yeah.
I was amazed at that study that the male ego would come to a game of chess. They didn't look at the Queen's Gambit, obviously.
Well, it says men resign more quickly after fewer moves against other men than they do against women. And obviously there was that increased willingness from a psychological aspect to compete against women. Now, let's try and put the shoe on the other foot, Eileen. Are there any circumstances in which you would be bothered losing to a man?
Okay, well, personally, I am very competitive. So, yeah, I don't like losing to anyone. But I was trying to think, what other sports or activities are there where male and female are in direct competition? Because, like, so many of the physical activities, you have your women's sport and your men's sport, you know? So, again, you have mixed doubles, maybe, but it's not too often that we see them in direct competition.
Yeah.
And
it tends then to be in the non-physical realm, maybe quizzes and things like that.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I suppose even within that, you tend to feel like men have a stronger knowledge of certain subjects compared to women. Like, you might stereotype and say, well, men are better at the sports questions and women are better at the soaps, or, you know, that's just been very stereotypical.
Well, I was about to say, like, aren't you a bit of a legend in camogie circles?
I don't.
You can ask me any sports question, I wouldn't be able to answer it.
I probably wouldn't
any.
Be as good with the names and all of them, but yeah.
No, I'd be like you, Vincent, when it comes to sports knowledge. Not a hope. Not a hope. Yeah. So, I just hate losing. It doesn't really matter to who.
Even the kids.
Yeah,
especially the kids.
I find it hard to let the kids win. I have to remind myself.
Yeah. We play Mario Kart at home. And sometimes it's, you know, the grown-ups versus the kids. And sometimes it's the boys against the girls. It's very seldom a mixed. But either way, whoever loses, there is trouble. There's
oh, it's like Monopoly
trouble.
Years ago. Absolute psychological warfare. And then we bought Ludo, a wooden version of Ludo. And me and the kids are just killing each other over it. There's like the little pieces are being flicked off the edge of the table when they're being sent home and stuff. It's absolute all-out warfare. It's crazy.
I'm glad it's not just my house.
Yeah, I mean, crazy.
You two teenage boys as well, Eileen. What's the competition like between them?
Yeah, there's serious competition within our house, but no matter what it is. But yeah, usually sports, taking shots. Yeah, we have to win. So it's not off the ground elected, I have to say. They're two very competitive parents. And I find it hard to understand people who don't get competitive. People are like, it's fine. And I wouldn't mind. My young lad has gone to soccer camp this morning. And the last thing I said to him was like, now it's about having fun. You don't have to win all the games. And he just looked at me. Shut
yeah,
the door.
Yeah. Who is this person? Who is this person? As her nose grows like Pinocchio.
I know. Takes it too seriously sometimes.
On our Friday panel, Eileen Loughlin. You can look her up on Instagram. Everything Eileen. Geraldine Byrne is here as well. Chairperson of the Offaly Beekeepers Association, as is local artist Vincent Devine. On Monday, it was reported in the Irish Independent that the Junior Cert curriculum would be revamped to include lessons on pornography, that these would be given in the classroom, along with issues such as consent and so on. And it would be the first time in 20 years that the curriculum was updated in this way to reflect the online world, the sharing of images that 20 years ago, it just wasn't possible. And many people may have shuffled awkwardly into the newsagent in the 90s when Playboy was on the top shelf. And yes, speaking from personal experience, Vincent is looking on here. Come on, as if I'm the only one to have done that. You took an interest in this story, Vincent. Why did it jump out at you?
I took an interest because I just feel like it's a massive issue with the younger generation, and especially with my generation, where the internet became widely available and then pornography became widely accessible as well to the most of us.
Hmm. Your generation being you're in your 30s?
So I'm 36 now. And, you know, the conversations around, you know, your sexual awareness as a teenager, we were just starting to break down the barriers there because religion was starting to release its grip slightly on, you know, the shame aspects of it. But the conversation still wasn't there. And then with the old generation as well, the conversation wasn't. And then with the sexual revolution in the 60s and 70s, pornography became more available. It started off in print and then it started off in VHS and it moved on from that. So my first experience with pornography was on VHS on a tape. And
when you were what age?
I would have been about maybe 13, 14. And I mean, what people don't realise is some generations of people, that's how they learned to be intimate. And now we're in a stage where with the relax of religion in the country, there has been a relax of moralistic values as well. And then what's happened indirectly is that the moralistic values of sexual intercourse and respect for people in that, you know, act has become, I suppose, the song Blurred Lines comes to, you know, remember that big controversy with the Robin Thicke song?
Yes. And that was more of the video as well, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And the content. And I think this is a very important thing for people to talk about in an academic arena as well, because it destigmatizes it, first of all. And then it also allows people to open up the conversation around what consent is, you know. And I mean, I got a very good piece of advice when I was 14, 15 and started to become sexually active from an older friend of mine who was sexually active already. And he said, just remember, as a man, you have a privilege straight away because you have physical prowess over a woman. And he said, just make sure that she feels comfortable and respected. And allow her to lead the way, and then that will be returned to you in kind, sort of thing. Mm, mm. And it led to me having
That's a
very
sage position, all right, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I mean, and he was absolutely, you know, we were drinking one night, and he was, you know, had a few in him saying this to me. He doesn't even remember saying this, but it was obviously with the purest of integrity that he said it and intention. And it led to me having this very healthy and active sex life where the women felt respected, and they felt like, you know, I understood what they wanted to a point. And that was important for me because it taught me these lessons that I can now instill into my son. And to say to him, look, if you do engage in looking at pornography, just remember that's not the be all and end all. And because of the relax of moralistic values, you have to remember as well, just for people, I mean, that maybe don't look at pornography or people that don't know the ins and outs of it, it's a business.
Oh, it's a massive like industry, And it can become a source of addiction as well.
And it's not real life. These are not realistic situations that are happening. And people are trying to recreate them, especially teenagers that have hormonal, they're all hormonal and stuff. And you're saying, this is not the way the real world works, because they are selling you a product. And the product are the men and women in these pornographic videos. And just realise, that's not the real world. And it should be more about the emotional and physical connection in tandem that allows you to develop a sexual relationship with a partner. And that works for men and women. It works both sides of it. And I think that our younger generation need to know these values. Because
here's where the argument broke out on text and phone calls earlier in the week when we discussed this. It's accepted by most parents who contacted us that there is a place for this in school. What became a source of contention was how it was presented, what the messaging would be, at what age, and so on. Now, maybe give us a classroom perspective. And I know you're retired from teaching, Geraldine, and it was primary school age children. But I recall, and I'm 5 years older than Vincent, 41, we, at the end of sixth class, a video was put on for us collectively. It was the local priest who put it on.
Yeah.
And there was this lady delivering through the prism of the Catholic ethos the view about God and bodies and so on. And it was more of a moral message than, you know, practical, you know, and so on. So what sort of challenge did that present in the classroom to try and, you know, make that relevant, make that something that the children would engage with rather than be embarrassed about?
Oh, I don't think children did engage. You know, that was just something that happened in a very disparate, you know, it was just there for sixth class.
And there was no setup. It just came out of the blue one evening.
Very embarrassing. And you just did that for half an hour. Now, we didn't have sixth class, so we only had up to second. But
okay,
I just remember, you know, hearing this was the piece that was done in sixth class. And, oh, you know, everybody said, oh, that's that. I mean, it was
tick the box, move on.
Tick the box and move on. I mean, there is a new program now in the last years, that relationships and sexuality program. I mean, that's very important, so that the whole thing, it's not just pornography, not just, it's the whole package. Whole package. It's relationships. And I mean, your bit of the advice you got, I mean, that should underpin all those programs. That just goes to the heart of it. Just respect for other people, be it male or female, but particularly, I suppose, because the boys are more physically stronger.
Although, and I want to get Eileen's perspective on this in a moment, but you said he gave you that advice in the pub. If it had been a teacher in a classroom, would it have made the same impact to you?
That's a very good point. But I would have taken it in. But you see, I suppose, now, this is a bit of psychology, what I want with you. I don't know how, like, I have a client who's a psychologist, and she said because I'm a kid dog, left-handed, that I engage the other side of my brain, which is kind of the female side of my brain. So she says that I can connect to, which goes back to the Vicky Phelan thing, and being able to connect to women's issues and stuff. So maybe because I'm a kid dog, it may, you know, mean that my brain works differently. But saying that, it's all dependent on the teacher. Really, I think, comes down to the teacher and the way they deliver it.
And the context of it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That it's not just just a separate class that you can take, that it's part of the whole ethos of the classroom, and that this would come in, and that everybody is taught to respect everybody from a very young age, not just at teenage level. I mean, I do think this programme is really important. It's really important when you see how children are so upset by things that they're getting online. It's the online abuse and online bullying that would really bother me.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say to the listeners as well, like I'd be for this now for teenagers, as in like, you know, from we'll say start it off progressively and just talk about body autonomy, and nobody has the right to physically interact with your body in any sort of way, and then kind of graduate into the junior cert and then say, look, here's where we move into kind of, if you're going to start becoming sexually active, here are some of the things that we need to talk about. And consent is a massive one as well. So I mean, in the age of, I mean, I was talking to clients as well from Italy, and they were saying that in southern Italy there's a massive problem with females coming forward that are reporting sexual abuse, and their husbands are just walking away kind of laughing at the women in southern Italy. And they said it's a kind of a very it's a very big problem. And a lot of women as well have experienced sexual violence or groping and stuff, and this all needs to be headed off at the early generations to catch them before they get into that age of, you know, seeing people and, you know, starting to become sexually active and kind of get ahead of it, you know.
I want to bring Eileen into the conversation because you have, as we mentioned earlier, Eileen, two teenage boys, and okay, the school has to play its part. How do you broach it at home, or do you?
Yeah, no, I think like that it's part of everyday life, that you're really focusing more on everyday values, you know, that they know respect and how to talk to and treat women properly, and that's what they're seeing in the home environment every day. And it just one thing in the article that, you know, that Norma Foley said, we need to empower students not to accept domestic violence. My thing is, we need to in the first instance teach them not to do it, you know. I think that should be emphasis. It should be turned the other way around, just little things like that. Yeah, but I think it's what they see in the people around them, and, you know, their extended family, things like that, to know what values and what behavior is acceptable. And then to, you know, keep conversations open, that you can try, feel comfortable discussing things. And that's where it's important that the school let the family know, well, this is being discussed at this time, and it's a good chance to kind of continue the discussion at home.
How do you navigate the online world, and police is maybe too strong a word, but at least protect them against what's available to them?
I suppose you try to talk to them and explain what can be out there, the dangers. I find myself, the younger of the two boys, when he is on his devices, we try most as much as possible that he's within earshot. You know, his PlayStation is near the kitchen, and it's all online stuff, and you can hear his side of the conversation, which is something. And same with his tablet, if he's on it, that you're keeping an ear out to what he's watching. And I will be honest, there has been once or twice that I'm like, oh, hold up, let me see, what is that? You know, because these things can come through in ads and TikTok videos, and, you know, and you just, it is very difficult to 24/7 keep up with them. But it's about educating them, and that if they get any inappropriate messages, to let us know, to tell us that they're not in trouble, but we just want to be aware and make sure, and like that, not to click any links they don't know. But you can only do your best. Like, there's no guarantee that's enough to safeguard them, but, you know, education I think is the way forward, and keeping open lines of communication, that they're not trying to hide things or be afraid that they'll be in trouble if they stumble across something that, you know, you can say, look, it's not your fault, but we'll try tackle it.
Does your gut tell you that they're listening, or do you get the kind of, yeah, ma, whatever attitude?
I do get the yeah, whatever attitude, but I think deep down, if they know they can come to you with a problem, regardless of what it is, I think that's the important thing, that, you know, that sense of, okay, oops, this has happened, but we can come to them and they'll help us sort it out, as opposed to being afraid, like, oh, I shouldn't have been doing that. But again, that's what you hope, whether it comes across to them like that, I don't know.
It's a minefield. That simply didn't exist a few years ago.
I was just thinking, pornography at my time was Country Girls and John McGahern's The Dark. I mean, that was, they were banned when I was...
I've never even heard of that.
I was about to say, go on.
Keep going. We're interested.
What is this scandal?
Edna O'Brien's book, The Country Girls, there were three girls. It was sort of autobiographical, going to London.
Mm.
And I mean, that was really bad. And then
John McGavin. What did they get up to in London?
All sorts of terrible things that never happened in Ireland.
Oh, I see. Yes.
But it was banned, so I didn't read it.
This was before the Late Late Show then.
Oh, very much before. I never read a banned book, so that's okay. I just heard about it.
On our Friday panel, somebody I don't believe, Geraldine Byrne of the Offaly Beekeepers Association, artist Vincent Devine, and Eileen Loughlin, blogger and Instagrammer. There are many stories from the week that perhaps we've talked enough about. The end of the era for cheap mortgages, the ECB raising its rate by 0.5% yesterday. That'll be passed on to trackers. We learned as well that minimum alcohol pricing didn't really have the effect that was desired. And we also discovered how on a beach in Dublin, 10 tons of waste was dumped on the hottest day of the year. 10 tons, just picture this, 6 hours is how long it took the council workers to clear it.
I heard them interviewed. It was disgraceful. It was unbelievable.
I mean, look, I mean, what's wrong with you bringing a reusable bag with you and putting your stuff into the bag, bringing it back to the car and getting rid of it? I just don't understand the ethos. I mean, I've had to stop myself now a few times seeing people just throwing rubbish and literally walking over and just throwing it back in the car with them. I actually just can't get over it. I mean, it's like people are using the earth as their own, you know, personal dumping ground. And it's kind of like, lads, I mean, look after, I mean, you see that with the bees. I mean, the bees are so important to the world, Geraldine. And like, I mean, you look at people going to the beaches and stuff. I do not understand what the issue is, just bringing your own black bag. And then that they're getting abuse, they're given abuse when they're throwing stuff on the ground. I mean, I just understand what people's mentality is there. I don't understand it.
Who do they think is going to clean up after them? And I suppose that's back to, you know, early childhood and, you know, home and school. Like, who do people think is going to clean up that beach? You know, it's not some, you know, anonymous council that are going to come. There are people who have to come now and clean up after them. I can't. Understand it.
I was watching a video last night, so Liz Truss obviously is the favourite now to succeed Boris Johnson as British Prime Minister, and some compare her to Margaret Thatcher. And there was an interview anyway with Margaret Thatcher, and she was saying there is no such thing as government money. It all comes from the people. And the difference, I suppose, or the comparison here is, well, we collectively have to do the cleanup, whether we do it directly or we pay somebody else. But either way, it comes back to us. So you're not offending the man. You know, it's not making work for Leo Varadkar, Micheál Martin, whomever. It's the council worker and we all pay for it.
Yeah, it's this whole attitude of, well, it's not my problem, I don't have to worry about it. And I mean, this is the attitude of certain people and certain people with certain upbringings. And I mean, I don't care what anybody says, you have a duty if you make a mess, clean it up. Be it anything in life. If you make a mess of anybody's life, let's say something psychologically, something in the family home, something like that, even a mess on the ground somewhere else, it's your duty bound, I think, as a citizen of the planet, Jesus Christ, to clean it up. Just clean up after yourself.
Eileen, I know you live in a reasonably remote area and you're from Delvin, that sort of direction. So do you see on the highways and byways when you're out for a walk, do you see the black bags or are you able to keep it under control where you live?
No, not a huge amount, I have to say. And I was even, I don't make it to the beach, but I was at Loch Ennell now a few days ago and there was a lot of campers and a lot of the rubbish, in fairness, was stacked beside the bins. It did seem quite neat and tidy because the pictures from the beaches are disgraceful. But also actually an idea I saw somewhere online was a beach in Wexford and they have a toy library. So when you're finished with your book, and your spade or your plastic toy, they were actually leaving them in a library or a space that anyone could use them, take them, use them and return them when they were finished. And something as simple as that was a lovely idea, you know. And I think it's just this ripple of that one group of people, and it's not, you know. So like, take personal responsibility, clean up your stuff, bring your one bag of rubbish, and it's a lot easier than someone having to tidy up after absolutely everybody.
Well, let's hope a development not too far away from you, Eileen. Mullingar's first dog park, in fact, the Midlands' first dog park, opened to the public. That's a good case study for whether people take responsibility or not.
And don't leave their little black bags hanging on the on trees. That's a huge phenomenon. People take up dog poop. And hang the bag.
I don't believe you. So they go to the trouble.
Oh, yes, they do. I thought, I have seen it in Charleville a few times when I'd go for a walk. You see little black bags. And I was saying, what are those little black bags? Mm. Of course, I had a little peep.
Oh, no.
I didn't open it, but I just looked and I said, oh, no. Anyway, I thought that's very strange. Some very strange person there. There was an article on something that is quite common. That people get their dog bags and hang them up.
I don't get
that's
it.
Crazy.
So
I certainly don't get that. Now talk about psychedelics.
Yeah, they take the moral high ground. I am not going to have my dog leave his or her doo-doos there. I'll pick that up, but I'll hang it from a tree.
Just watch now. You'll see it. I think it's fascinating that somebody... I'd love to see somebody...
doing a jet.
Oh. Here's one for you. And this caught Vincent's eye. There's a university in Texas where you can study Harry Styles. Now, explain this. What part of Harry are we studying?
It's not that it's Harry Styles. It's that people are studying celebrities, because I think when someone has a talent and then they become famous for that talent and then they want to kind of retreat from all kind of public eye, I mean, I think that's the consequence, I suppose, of being in the public eye, is that you kind of have to retire your public life to a point. Hmm. But I just think it's fascinating how people can manipulate socially people around them and then become these celebrated people that have these fanatical fans around them. And I think it needs to happen now, where people study people in musical history and then in celebrity culture, to see what did these people do and what do people connect to with them that made them these kind of phenomenological kind of music stars, movie stars and things like that. And you kind of look at people like Madonna, that's been around for so long. And why have people not studied Madonna academically to say, right, here's where she started, here's where she ended up. And how the hell does she keep that going? People like Cher, you know, Frank Sinatra, all these big people. So I've been wondering for maybe over a decade why these people aren't being studied as a subject in colleges, in music colleges, to look at, first of all, their craft and then how they've navigated socially the context of being a celebrity and how they get to that stage of having this kind of, I suppose, status. But that goes back right to Roman times, Greek times. And I mean, it's interesting to see how it's kind of come into culture and it's heavily monetized and materialistic and stuff like that. I just think it's fascinating, especially when I was in places like
Miami. Are you having a go at influencers? Are you having a go at Eileen there?
No, I just think it's fascinating to me, because I just think it's a whole different part of culture we're moving towards. And because of social media, we're becoming this global, I suppose, this globalized culture. Mm. And I think that people are starting to stop seeing borders as much, and starting to look across the pond at different things and across the world. And celebrities have made a huge advantage of this by bringing something as widely known as music and then bringing it all around the world. I don't know if I'm making any sense or not.
I know where you're leading. I'm just wondering, like, who would you like to study then? And let's give that word to the ladies here. If there was one celebrity that you could, you know, take lessons from, Eileen, who might it be?
Oh, that's a tricky one. When I read that article, I really thought it was more like their art. You know, the way going to secondary school, we studied art history and you studied, you know, Monet and all the different eras. That's what I thought it was more getting at, actually studying their craft, their music. But the way Vincent says is interesting, studying them as a whole, like Britney Spears, like, is fascinating. Mm. It's nearly like she's not her own person. Mm. She is a commodity, you know, and it just is a sign of how it all went wrong, in a sense. I feel like she never had lived her life. She was managed by so many people, and even you get the feeling exploited by her own family. So I suppose if Vincent is looking at it more at that angle, like, you know, studying them as a whole, their everything, it is fascinating, I think.
Yeah, I just wondered, one of the reasons people go to college is they want to get a job at the end of it. I mean, what would you be employed to do if you studied Harry Styles?
You're trying to, I suppose, look at the social structures that exist already and see how do I use this to my advantage to, I suppose, monetize it and then, I suppose, live a life of service and give back. Because you have to remember, these people that are singing about their feelings and emotions, this is a way for them to take their emotions in and then people connect with. Like Alanis Morissette is a huge example of that. She became a massive, massive star because she internalized her feelings, put it into, I do that with my art. I mean, I internalize certain things and then some of my newer work will be externalizing some of the stuff that I've been through. And I mean, I think it's fascinating to look at if they've connected into some sort of, I suppose, zeitgeist of expression that people are connecting to them with. And it kind of globalises things and brings us all together kind of globally, you know?
I'm getting dirty looks. We've gone over time. It's 12 o'clock, guys. So thank you very much for joining us. Eileen Loughlin, Geraldine Byrne, Vincent Devine. And thanks to Sinead for putting it all together. We'll be back on your radio Monday morning from 9. Bye-bye.